May I congratulate my right honourable friend on his statement, and may I urge him to resist the temptation of advice from a second-rate lawyer who doesn't even understand the parliamentary process. Can I...
Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, where we talk about politics, current affairs and social issues. I'm joined, as per usual, by my co-host Jazza. Jazza, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm soggy because it was raining.
Soggy because it was raining.
Not because of the usual reasons that I'm soggy. Wonk wonk.
Wow.
We've lowered the tone.
On that bombshell, we're joined this week by a special guest, Carl Benjamin, better known as Sargon of Akkad on YouTube. How's it going?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to explain to people who don't know what you do, roughly what you do? No.
It wasn't meant to be a loaded question.
Yeah, I make YouTube videos about current events, ideas, and various other sort of political subjects, I suppose.
You've come up from, well, as I said earlier, come up from relative obscurity, and you're quite a big name now in certain sections of YouTube politics. What kind of better like angle would you say that you come at it from? Because it's probably the sort of politics that most people are not really used to.
At least our listeners.
Yes, our listeners.
Well, I mean, I don't know, really. I suppose I've always considered myself like a sort of classical liberal. Mm. So I've always considered, universal rights, personal freedoms, free market, all that sort of stuff is all obviously important. But I'm not against the concept of, socialised healthcare, and a welfare state. Because, I've had to rely on these things myself, and so I can see the advantage of having them. And so I don't see there's any need to be totally inflexible on the subject. So I don't really know. I just try to come from sort of a rational perspective, what is actually going to work and what's going to do the most good for the least deficit,
Okay.
And you're kind of known for being, shining a light on, feminism and the hardcore feminism movement and Islam as well. Would I be right?
I've got many criticisms of many ideologies.
Sorry. It's one of my favourite things. Everybody's a bloody stupid idiot. That's what I think that everybody needs to start approaching.
Yeah.
Every argument with.
But basically, if people took that as the baseline and then went from there, then we'd probably get a lot more done.
Yeah, actually.
I feel that's the basic philosophy, and we prove it every single week.
So this week, as usual, we're going to be talking about three topics that have been in the news over the past week. Firstly, it's the Scottish National Party conference right now, still, right?
Is it still going?
I think it's still going.
Man, nothing lasts forever.
Yeah, apparently there was a time when party conferences lasted 2 days.
Really?
And then, the good old days.
Yeah, can't even imagine.
big news is that Sturgeon has said, Nicola Sturgeon, the SNP leader, is going to pursue another independence referendum.
She is.
Right?
Mm-hmm. But how is she going to pursue it? How soon is that going to happen? Who knows?
It's got to be after Article 50, obviously, so...
We'll talk about that in a moment.
Okay, go on. Yeah.
So what's the second topic that we're going to go through? I've already forgotten. it's actually Parliament and Brexit.
There's a perception that people voted for Brexit so that we could return sovereignty to our own Parliament. But Theresa May doesn't really want Parliament to have a say in Brexit and just kind of wants to go ahead and push it through with as little scrutiny as possible. I have feelings about that as somebody who voted to remain, and I'd quite like us to not fuck up the country as much as possible.
Did you vote to leave?
Of course I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
You see, this is the first time we have two.
I may be in a croissant, but I'm not the traitor. I might look.
There was the podcast where, just before the leave. The leave referendum and Junie came out to me and was like, he literally came out to me and was like, yeah, I'm going to vote to leave, and I just I had a breakdown on the mic.
Good man.
To be fair, I wasn't hiding it like in perpetuity, like some positive game. It was actually.
Well, no, you like.
I oscillated.
As somebody who had to. Yeah. The shiftiness of the eye, the almost I have something to say. There were a lot of overlaps, and I'm proud of you, Jimmy, for being able to have that frank conversation with me.
There was a lot of pressure from this side.
And I'm proud of you for voting the right way.
And then finally, we're going to be talking about the Olympian Louis Smith, who is famous for his performances on the pommel horse. He's a silver medalist at Rio. And he was criticised this week when a video emerged of him mocking Islam. He's ended up apologising profusely. He was kind of ripped to shreds on loose women. If you're going to go on loose women...
Just don't. If you're thinking of going on loose women, don't.
Yeah. But we'll be talking about the implications of that, whether he should have apologised, and all of those kinds of things. I feel like I'm going to get beaten, like, if you end up on here, but that's going to be fun.
It's going to be healthy. It's, you know, going to be a growing experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Politically speaking.
Exactly. So, diving straight in.
Yes.
The S&P and Sturgeon and Referendum 2, IndyRef 2, hashtag, as it's now being called on Twitter.
I'm all in favour of the Scots determining their own future. If they want to leave, they are more than to leave, in my opinion.
Is there a case to do it so soon after the first IndyRef referendum? Because obviously we had that in 2014.
Yeah, I personally think that it's probably... it seems that there's an awful lot of... this is about posturing more than anything. And I don't think that massive decisions should be made under the guise of, well, we're going to call your bluff. And that's a bad idea. Because at the end of the day, I mean, there's a big question of whether Scotland can even join the EU on its own, isn't it? And I'm not an expert on this, so it's just what I've casually read in the papers. But apparently the European Union, they have already established that Scotland would have to apply to join.
Yeah.
And there are definite questions about its suitability to join. I mean, if you know, Eastern Europe can get in, I'm sure Scotland can, but it's going to be, you know...
The traditional idea in 2014 when we had IndyRef 1, the original and therefore I think better referendums, there was a lot of talk about Spain blocking Scotland.
Spain still wants to block Scotland.
Because of their own independence movement in Basque Country, but more so in Catalonia. Because there's a strong independence movement there as well. I saw this from Sturgeon. I was actually quite surprised that she's going for it so soon. I understood that obviously when the SNP have the vast majority of seats in Parliament and are still the majority in Holyrood up in Edinburgh, this is obviously still going to be on the table because...
Yeah, it's never going away.
Have voted for a party that wants independence.
Well, a lot of people say it's more to do with internal party management than any useful timing from her point of view.
So, in the last couple of weeks, we saw Theresa May throwing red meat to her backbenchers, those who are generally more Eurosceptic, giving a precise date for when she wants to trigger Article 50, stop the 2-year process of leaving the EU. And I feel like this is essentially Nicola Sturgeon doing the same thing. This is... her setting the agenda. Perhaps she can have a little bit of leeway aside, but it's going to shut up the people who are saying we want independence.
Now, as I understand it, with the 2014 referendum, they were planning to leave the United Kingdom but keep the pound as their currency.
That was the gist of it.
I'd be dubious if you can really call yourself a sovereign nation if someone else is controlling the currency.
I'd agree with
but
that.
But the second point is, okay, so if they now... We've left the EU. They leave the UK and they apply to join the EU. Whose currency are they planning on using?
So I don't understand why a Scottish pound pinned to the UK pound wasn't really an option.
It was an option. Yeah, the controversy was about whether they'd have any input on monetary policy set by the Bank of England. Mm-hmm. But they do have the
Bank of Scotland that prints their own money. And so then...
Yeah, but they're allowed to print money, but it's not the same thing as controlling the currency.
Yeah, it's all like under like a pyramid of the Bank of England printing it all.
But then, so I didn't understand. Obviously, it's a long process to set up something along the lines of Bank of England, which would end up setting like financial and monetary policy.
It's actually RBS that prints the Scottish money, I think, and there's one other bank, Clydesdale.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So it's not like an official body.
Yeah.
But I feel like even in 2014, they were their goal at the end of the day was to join the European Union and to use the euro. So the use of a foreign, what would end up being a foreign nation's currency would have only been like a stopgap. And I do kind of understand that argument, but a lot of the economic arguments at the moment, because in 2014 a lot of their ideas of being able to stand on their own as a nation were based on
the price of oil,
getting for North Sea oil, which, and there was a lot of argument about who was going to get jurisdiction over North Sea oil, because the UK has it now. How does that get split up if Scotland decides to leave? And oil has the price of oil has plummeted, and it seems like people who are looking to who would vote to remain, that's one of the main reasons that they would vote to remain, and there's still a majority who would want to stay in the
remain
UK,
within the union, you mean?
Yeah,
right.
I would have thought that they'd be looking at like the other smaller nations in the European Union, like Portugal and Greece, thinking, well, how are their economies doing, and what happens if we end up joining the EU and getting pegged to the euro? You know, if they end up joining the euro, I mean, one of the major problems with Greece when it came, when the Grexit thing was coming along, is that the Greeks
too many portmanteaus.
There are, but they're being used. So
the
problem is they can't devalue their currency, because and I don't usually agree with Marxist economics, but the Yanis Varoufakis, who was the finance minister at the time, wanted to. Well, he didn't want to, but he knew that one of the options to improve the situation in Greece would be to readopt the drachma, devalue it, get lots of foreign investment, create jobs, and increase tourism and all this sort of thing. And we know that that would work, because that's exactly what's happened since the Brexit vote. Since the devaluation of the pound, tourism's up. The economy is actually growing. Don't get me wrong, there are many other things on the horizon that are coming, but that is
there's
a
no
direct
more
effect.
Marmite in Tesco in weather, isn't
it? I appreciate there are other issues raised, and don't worry, I am a lover of Marmite myself, so, you know, I appreciate there are other issues, but the point is, we do know that that would be a tangible economic effect that Greece could have done, but they couldn't, because the Troika wouldn't let them leave the euro.
But
to be fair, the Scottish economy, the way it's structured, is probably more similar to Germany than Greece was.
Without a doubt. But you don't know what's going to happen in like 5 years' time.
True.
You know, you don't know what the situation will be. And for some reason, Scotland might find itself in a position where it needs to leave the euro and has the Troika breathing down its neck, refusing to allow it.
But so, a lot of the other nations in the EU that haven't adopted the euro have said they'll adopt the euro, and they appear to be putting it off indefinitely.
Yes.
And even though there's pressure for them to adopt the euro, they can effectively kick that can forever down the road. So I assume Scotland, if it wanted to, could adopt the pound for a while and then maybe unpeg it from the British pound or the English pound, as it were, and then just carry on.
It depends on the conditions of going into the EU.
It does,
they might set adopting the euro as one of them.
And well, it's still the standard is if you're going to join the EU now, post 2001, I believe, then you have to join.
Well, you have to pledge to join the EU.
Yeah, at some point, because Romania still is a member of the EU but still hasn't got the euro.
Still using
shells, eventually. Yeah,
there's quite a few countries like Czech Republic, Hungary.
But Sturgeon has to do this, right? Like after the June vote, when we voted to leave, she said that. She got elected on the promise that if there was a significant change in the circumstances between the relationship of Scotland and the rest of the UK, then referendum has to be on the table, right? She's doing the right thing. She's standing by politically what she has put forward. It's actually not very politician-y.
She's a fanatic, really, isn't she?
She probably is, but she also has a valid mandate to do what she's been elected to do. It's the same as what Cameron and Theresa May are doing. You know, for all their faults, they've actually done exactly the right thing by the will of the election. We can get to the necessary Parliament discussion in a second, if you like.
No, of course. But with Sturgeon, do you think that she's shooting herself in the foot by going too quickly? There was a lot of criticism of Theresa May she announced by the end of March, I will trigger Article 50, which means that we'll be leaving on the 1st of April.
But there was
a wonderful April Fool's joke.
There was criticism.
That was a good point.
You made that joke last time.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I didn't hear it. Okay, yeah. Only your listeners will have
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. heads.
Equally, Theresa May, before she like set up her plans and her schedule for leaving, was being criticised for not having a plan and a schedule for leaving. So what the fuck is she supposed to do?
Yeah, she's between a rock and a hard place. And everyone forgets that she was a Remainer. You know, she doesn't...
I know. She's very like, mild.
Public Remainer then.
We should remain. And then she hid for like a month.
Yes, she did.
It's like, actually, I'm really busy doing like home office things.
See, this is like with Jeremy Corbyn. It's like, you didn't campaign to remain hard enough, Jeremy. And Jeremy's like, well...
He at least turned up to events and stuff. And said,
Yeah,
I know the EU sucks. I know it fucking sucks, but you should vote to stay.
He gave it like a 7 out of 10 or something, didn't he?
Jesus.
I mean, if you listen to what he said, like, it didn't sound like a 7 out of 10.
He is obviously anti-EU, which is good. It's a redeeming quality that he has.
Yeah. We've blended into talking about leaving the EU now, which are called, like, referendums are on the brain. There's been a lot... So, Labour have actually realised that we're the major... party of opposition. It's very nice of them to come to that, apparently.
Sorry, when did this happen?
Apparently, since 2010.
I thought UKIP were the major opposition party. Christ.
Well, I'm not sure of the state that they're in at the moment.
Not at the moment, but...
Bless UKIP. But
the thing is, UKIP should disappear now. There's literally no reason for the existence of UKIP now, so that's great, isn't it?
Well,
they used to have at least grammar schools on their side, and the Tories snapped that up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's literally... What mandate do they have?
Stealing seats from Labour. They're now going to have to shift to that kind of perspective.
But if Labour is stupid enough to lose seats to UKIP, then they deserve everything.
Well, they're already starting to at the last general election, the local elections in northern England.
Yeah, they're second place. All over south of Essex as well, which was one of the highest voting, the highest regions to vote to vote leave.
Oh, right.
UKIP are in second place everywhere, and it doesn't matter whether it's Northern and Conservative or whether it's Southern Labour seats.
That's why they were raging about the first past the post, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because they had a huge turnout, but everywhere it was just below the Tories. Yeah. So it was just like, sorry. Yeah.
It's almost as if the will of the people doesn't want to be listened to.
Well, that's why people voted Brexit now.
Labour have blah blah blah. Labour have decided that we are going to actually do our job now. And what's his name? Keir Starmer, who is the shadow Brexit secretary.
Was he the former Attorney General at one point?
He's something lawyerly. Something lawyerly. So he knows how Parliament works. But he has set out 170 so questions before we leave the EU, which is basically, what kind of Brexit do we want? The idea of soft and hard is quite... It obviously simplifies the matter a bit too much. But... there's also the question about who is it who should decide how we leave the EU? Is it the largest party and the party with the majority, although the party that only got about 30-something percent of the vote?
37, I think it was.
Yeah, and 25 of the popular vote. Which I like to.
I know you like to raise this point, but Stephen Bush, your friend at the New Statesman, has already disproved that is even relevant.
Yeah, Stephen Bush. So. Bezzy makes arguing on Twitter.
Yeah.
But how much say is there a case for Parliament as a whole, rather than just the Conservative Party, deciding what kind of a Brexit there is, especially considering that something like 2/3 of members of Parliament actually wanted to stay.
So the argument is...
No. not at all. Absolutely. The Conservatives were elected on a mandate of calling the referendum. Mm-hmm. They won a majority. They called a referendum. There was a clear majority in the referendum. There is no need to involve anyone else in this. The Conservatives have done exactly what they said they would do. They've won every vote along the way. Mm-hmm. There is no democratic... need to ask anyone else. They have the legitimacy they need.
The Tory party led by Theresa May is not the same Tory party that was led by Derek.
Doesn't matter.
I think that is a really important point, because it's an almost completely different cabinet now.
It doesn't matter.
And I would also argue that you want some kind of an input, because of the fact that the referendum, by its very nature as a referendum, was a binary question. And it's actually the way that you leave the EU is so nuanced and difficult, complex.
I don't actually think it is. I think it is a case of hard Brexit, which is properly leaving the EU, and a soft Brexit, which is not really leaving the EU because you're still tied into all the treaties. You still have to abide by all the rules.
And May has been very clear on the hard Brexit.
So there's been a few clear kind of variables in the manner in which we leave the European Union. One is control over freedom of movement. One is access to the single market, although the word access isn't hugely accurate.
Informative.
But being part of the single market and our sovereignty in terms of like being able to make laws and not be part of an institution that has sovereignty over our own parliament. So those are kind of like three variables.
But all those variables in practice, the distinction can be sliced hard Brexit, soft Brexit. Either you're answerable to the European Court of Justice, which is the top EU court, or you're not.
Mm-hmm. And she's been very clear that she wants to leave the ECJ, right? The European Court of Justice. Because people voted to leave for very different reasons. Some were because of liberty reasons, some were because of immigration, some were because they wanted to stick two fingers up at the establishment, various different reasons. And the type of Brexit that we have has such wide implications for our economy, for our future as a country, that I feel like it does need to be debated, at least by the people who represent the population.
Yeah, right? That's what you would like, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
But that's not what they have to do.
I think there's a case for them having to do.
No, but that's because that's what you would like. They don't have to do.
I'm beyond trying to stop Brexit.
I'm just saying that you've got to make the distinction. There's actually nothing compelling them to do any of this.
No, there's nothing compelling them to do that, but I think that you end up, if you are to go full on hard Brexit, then you end up with something that, although we don't have very much data on this because of the fact that it's a referendum and it was yes or no, you end up with something that actually a tiny number of people really wanted. Even those who were campaigning for Brexit were campaigning on us staying in the single market. Some people wanted us to maintain freedom of movement.
I agree that, I mean, it would be a nice gesture if they were to take in the advice of the people who are opposed to it and stuff like that, and, you know, trying to accommodate everyone. But I think it's important, and the only reason I make this distinction is because of what I guess people call the Ramonas, and I don't think you're one of them, don't get me wrong. The Ramonas, I'm absolutely sick to the back teeth of hearing them talk about how they want to overturn the referendum. I'm unbelievably sick of it. And I'm at the point, because of the Ramonas, I'd be a lot more open to saying, yeah, okay, well, let's, you know, have a discourse across the table because, you know, you're going to have to live with the example afterwards as well, blah, blah. But after everything the Ramonas have called people who wanted to leave, I'm personally in the position of, you know what, they don't have to do anything. Fuck yourselves, you lost.
They lost. But people who voted to remain were nearly half of the nation. It was a tight referendum.
It was.
And I think that we need to...
But these excuses, if it was the other way around...
I'm not using it as an excuse.
If it was the other way around, and I was making that case, you'd be like, well, sorry.
But I think because we're... I don't think I would be at all, because...
Maybe not you personally. The Remain camp would be...
I'm sure, and it's very easy to say that to me, because I'm sitting next to you, and you're being very nice to
me.
But I think that when you have such a split decision, the fact that we're all going to have to live with the consequences, and nobody, I no matter what you say, I don't think that anybody has a mandate on the way that we choose to leave the European.
But if we vote remain, we wouldn't be talking about, oh, maybe we should leave the EU but remain in the European Economic Area.
Because the terms of remaining were already kind of set. Cameron, although he went to the EU, got a load of concessions in quotation marks.
Yeah, but
we knew what we were getting if we stayed. We didn't know what we were getting when we leave. Apart from,
we did know that we were leaving the European Union.
We
did know that a lot of it would come down. But what you're complaining about there is that you lost a loaded game.
How so?
Well, all of the media was all very pro-Remain.
Yeah.
All of the public...
It's about half the newspapers were pro-Leave.
Which ones?
You have the Telegraph,
the Sun, the Mail, yeah. Sorry, Mail on Sunday.
Yeah, okay, let's... Hang on, let's... Sorry, I guess I was figuring quality into this.
The Telegraph is a respectable publication.
The Telegraph had both. It wasn't just a Leave thing. But yeah, you start going the Daily Mail and the Sun. I guess they were. I just don't really consider them newspapers.
Do they not count the media?
Not really. how elitist of me.
All right, the shitty newspapers.
The crass populists were, yes.
Yeah.
But for the people whose opinions matter.
Yeah.
What am I saying? Where am I going with this?
Are you part of the media elite that Theresa May now hates?
I possibly am. I can empathise with the position on the Remain side. But the thing is, you guys, I guess they have to understand, they made their bet. Mm-hmm. They absolutely made the bet. It's not even the loss thing, right? It was the way you treated the people who wanted to leave. Not you personally, again, I say you because...
But that did happen on both sides, though.
Not nearly to the extent from people who wanted to leave. Come on. You can't suggest that people who were like, look, we need to leave the EU, were calling people racists and all of this xenophobes and all of this nonsense, right? These are just slanders. Mm-hmm. These did not address any of the issues.
It's a problem.
It's a problem that the entire left has, frankly. Mm-hmm. But these are just shaming tactics in order to get people to shut up and agree with the person shouting the slur, right? And that's why Brexit was a silent revolution. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to loads of people just in private conversation. They're like, yeah, well, I wanted to leave, but then I posted it on my Facebook. And then I got loads of people shouting at me, and so I just was like, okay, well, I'll just vote then, and that's what's happened.
So I completely agree that that's what's happened, and I also agree with you that I hate it when somebody cries, you're a white man and you can't understand, or you are...
Oh, you do that all the time.
No, but I do it in a really respectful way.
I do. It's okay when he does.
That tells you to sometimes listen to what other people are saying, right?
I'm going to bring this conversation next time.
I can't wait until we talk about Lucy. But I find it really confusing that you can have that... I keep on coming back to it, that binary question that...
It is a binary question. Ultimately, it is a binary question.
No, of course it is, but then how you do it wasn't laid out.
What do you mean, how you do it?
So even in 2014... Even in 2000... Yeah. No, but it's so much more complicated.
Loads of issues are way more complicated than they're portrayed to be. This one is actually less complicated.
But so, for example, in 2014, the SNP published a white paper that was, this is what Scotland is going to look like, with us as the major party leaving the EU. There was leaving the European Union. There was none of that this time around. Because
even if she can't come out and say, well, this is what it's going to look like when we leave the UK, that's a prediction. She doesn't know what's going to happen. And everyone who's predicted almost everything about Brexit hasn't really been that accurate, really.
How about those people who campaigned to leave who wanted us to stay in the single market? Who wanted us to just leave?
Who are these people?
Yeah, who are these people?
Dan Hannan, actually. Was
he wanted us to leave?
Wanted us to stay in the single market.
Well, then he doesn't get what he wants.
But he is somebody who was on your side.
Yeah.
And
I love that.
So I have very mixed feelings about Dan Hannan. I would love to have a beer with him, but I think I'd just get really annoyed at him.
Really? Why?
He's really smug.
He wrote...
He is. I'm not going to lie. He is a little bit. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have his charm.
But that's what I also find annoying. It's like, I like you, but you're a dick.
He's a glorious public speaker.
Though. Yeah, no.
Everyone says that, but if he's chatting horseshit, then it doesn't really matter.
You say that, but...
So I'm going to kind of flip this back on
sure.
you. Are you just happy... Are you happy for it to be this way? Because Theresa May is thinking about implementing the type of Brexit that you want. If she wanted us actually to stay within the single market, which could have been an interpretation of the vote, if she wanted us to still have free movement, which she never would have.
She absolutely could have gone for like the soft Brexit.
Would you have been okay with that?
Well, I would have accepted it. I mean, if that's what she wanted, and I mean, I might campaign, I might, you know, I might lobby, I might make videos, I might send emails or something like that.
Perhaps have your representative in Parliament argue your
case. I might even ask them to argue the case, but that's all I can do. I can't demand that the other people who aren't in charge of the Conservative Party get to have a say in what they do. I can only make my case and hope that they listen.
But I think there's a large number of people even in the Conservative Party who make up that majority. A majority of 16?
Yes,
Who disagree with the type of Brexit that is being implemented.
But if they're not the ones who are in charge of the party, then it doesn't matter, does it?
Can we talk about the legal aspect here, which totally glossed
over. Three lawyers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if I'm equipped for this, but go ahead.
The argument that Theresa May makes is that she has the power to decide how we leave the EU on the basis of royal prerogative, right, which is basically discretionary powers officially held by the Queen, but derogated to the Prime Minister. Stuff like the Prime Minister can declare war without consulting Parliament.
Yeah. It's basically like our entire political system.
Yeah, if you want to be more cynical than that. Yeah. But
I almost now kind of just want Queen Elizabeth to decide everything.
But so
I think it would be more popular. I think it would be more popular.
Some people make the opposite argument that because we're going to have to repeal the European Communities Act, and only Parliament can repeal an act, that therefore the decision falls within the remit of Parliament. So is that, like, aside from the whole principled argument that you guys are making, there is a whole legal argument.
I've got no doubt,
right. And I personally think Parliament probably will have to have a vote at some point, just from a legal point of view.
That's inevitably going to delay that deadline that Theresa May has put forward.
Well, we said when the deadline was put forward, like, there's a chance that will be missed, right? Like, in one form or another.
I think almost.
Yeah, I wouldn't say any of the deadlines are hard on anything.
Especially when it's going to have to end up going through the Lords, and we know that the Lords now has decided that it can stop laws from going through and stop things from being passed.
It can only delay them, actually.
But that delay could end up pushing us past.
Past
the exit of the EU, past the compulsory next election that we have in 2020. What happens then? It's very exciting.
It could do, but
revolution if it doesn't happen. it's not going to look. It's not going to be pretty if it doesn't happen. People,
you say that, but I reckon if the politicians had just stitched up the Brexit man and said, "Well, it's interesting that you have that view," but yeah. I don't think people would have done very much.
Really?
Yeah, the British people don't revolt. They're just not into it.
They have been known to.
But like the whole Iraq,
we just don't get talked about.
The whole Iraq war thing, like the whole, there was like, what, 2 million people on the streets or something and Tony Blair was like, that's great.
Yeah, but that was Tony Blair. Yeah. He's a little bit crazy.
And that was a foreign adventure, so it wasn't something that was directly affecting people.
I love that you call it an adventure.
Well, have you seen that he's thinking, I might come back into politics, so...
Really? We briefly discussed this. His image is so toxic.
Yeah. Like, you look like you haven't slept since 2002. Yeah. Why the hell would anyone vote for you?
Yeah, but he doesn't get it, does he? No. He doesn't understand that people don't like him.
He's not. Don't like is such a generous way of terming that. Tony Blair is about as popular as Margaret Thatcher.
I'd
say Margaret Thatcher is a bit more popular.
At least she's supporting the South.
Yeah, she's dead now. You have to like her.
Yeah.
So what do we think is going to happen, regardless of what we want? Do you think that it's inevitable that Parliament is going to end up having a say in it?
If not for legal reasons, then for political ones, I think she'll feel it necessary to put something before.
Yeah, she said she's not going to give a running commentary on it, so I imagine they're going to present some kind of dossier or manifesto or something. The white paper, when they have to. And then people are going to flip their shit. They're going to scream and shout. A few things probably will get changed, but I don't think the meat of it will change. And then that's what we'll end up going for, I reckon.
So you don't think that there's a chance that Parliament is going to adjust the type of Brexit that Theresa May has decided?
I think that there'll be certain points that are non-negotiable, like leaving the common market.
And freedom of movement.
Yeah. Mm. I think those things will be non-negotiable, because they were... I mean, immigration in the north, sovereignty in the south, are the two main reasons I think people left. Because it's amazing how much of the south of England were just like, no.
Yeah.
We're out. And Cornwall, like, gets a massive amount of EU money.
And
they
vote, as well.
Yeah, and Wales as well, and they vote Leave. And it's like, okay. I mean, I guess they're not in it for the money, you know. They've got another reason, so...
But those are two regions, I think, that... I think that... you can argue against me here, but the main reason that we ended up leaving the EU was because there's parts of the UK that, because of the nature of first past the post, just haven't been represented by Parliament. How does Ed Miliband represent Doncaster? Like just as an example.
I'm not against electoral reform or anything like that mm-hmm. in the UK. I mean, we've had many reforms because they're necessary, and it could be that we've come to another point in time where we need another one. I'm not against the idea.
Cool. Yeah. Louis Smith.
Yes.
Go on.
Well, you've read the story, so...
But you've read the story. You suggested the story, Jimmy. You don't pass the buck now.
You've read the story in greater detail than I have, so I'm going to let you introduce it.
So, Louis Smith, who is a gymnast with Team GB, an Olympian, got into a lot of hot water this week because he got very drunk, ended up... This is the story as he describes it. Ended up singing a load of Disney songs. They ended up inevitably getting to Aladdin. I'm a personal big fan of Arabian Nights. I'll sing it while I'm jogging very regularly. Well, when I do jog, that's not a regular occurrence anymore. But they drunkenly decided that they needed a magic carpet. Got a carpet from off the wall, apparently, because that's where carpets were.
Fancy digs.
Yeah, and then ended up mocking the call to prayer, mocking prayer, Muslim prayer in general.
I said Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar, which means
that's terribly offensive. As an atheist, I demand an apology.
But he's apologised profusely for what he did.
So what exactly did he do wrong?
So I agree that he did something wrong. The reason that I think that he had to apologise was because it ended up being public. I think that when you're pissed with your mates, you do and say stupid shit. But it's all about the space and the context. So I'm a big fan of drag queens. I'm a big fan of certain drag queens who end up singing songs about having underage sex and have songs about HIV and... But because of the setting...
Where is this going?
But because of the, there is the concept. Luke. So because of the context of when you go to a drag club, you yeah. know exactly what you're signing up for. Yeah. That space is safe to talk about that kind of stuff. A different take on safe spaces, I know.
In a comedy club, if somebody says something offensive, yeah. it's like you're yeah, in a club.
The problem that we have with the internet is the fact that those spaces are not clearly defined.
Yeah.
And when Louis Smith is drunk and...
who makes the video?
You know what I love about this? This is a fabulous defence of Donald Trump. I completely agree.
Okay.
You know it is, though. It is. Yeah, you know it is.
I'm not following your logic.
On the bus, a hot mic, a group of guys sit around chatting the shit, and someone else from outside can hear it. All of a sudden, like you say, exactly like this guy, they were in what they consider to be a safe space mm-hmm. for this kind of behaviour, and it's been leaked out, and that's exactly the same thing. So,
the difference is that Donald Trump is running for president.
That's not different.
I think that
it's the same in principle.
Difference is that there's now a lot of people saying that those words have transferred into behaviour as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, these are all allegations,
and they're very politically timed.
No, of course they are, and I have no doubt
the fact that
the Clinton campaign has coordinated this to a certain extent.
Yes, and if we're going to start talking about allegations, uh-huh. we can go back quite a long way with the Clintons.
Yeah, so, sure, like Hillary Clinton is an imperfect candidate by a long.
Don't get me wrong. She absolutely is, and Donald Trump is manifestly flawed in almost mm-hmm. every way. I mean, Donald Trump is literally like a collection of flaws that have been put into a sort of pork shape mm-hmm. and given life and, for some reason, confidence. Mm-hmm. But he's Hillary Clinton is Hillary Clinton, and she's been in the system and done plenty of bad things.
So well, to draw it, to
I would be voting for Jill Stein anyway.
Honestly, I don't believe in vaccines. Apart from that, I would prefer her or Gary Johnson over the main two.
So that was fun, but
yeah, no, sorry, let's go back to Lucy.
I just had to get you on that line of logic.
Completely fine. So because this ended up being in the public eye, I feel like you have to. He had to apologise because his. People weren't there drunk with him. There's actually somebody in the video who says, "Dude, this isn't cool," and then he continues to do it. I think that he's right to apologise. I think that he should have apologised because he's a public figure.
Okay. I really hate this apologising.
But I think that people should accept his apology that he was drunk and he's a 27-year-old, and that then we should move on with it. Well, okay. I don't believe with dragging him over the coals in the way that he has.
Whenever anyone offers an apology, it's incumbent on the person receiving it to accept it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're being rude then. Mm-hmm. But what exactly did he do wrong?
So, what I think that he did wrong... So, I believe in respecting other people's faiths, even though I don't believe in them.
So,
have you watched The Life of Brian?
Yes.
Did you find it funny?
Yes.
You owe everyone an apology.
Yeah, you realise, like, Muslims, Christians, Jews, they all thought that that was
but
really
people
offensive.
Went into they that did, film yeah. knowing that it was a parody on faith.
Yeah, but
like
they were still really upset about it.
Yeah, but what you're saying is if you satirise someone's faith...
He wasn't being a satirist. He was being drunk and stupid.
But he was still satirising their religion and their practices. Even if it was bad satire, and even if it was literally to an audience of like two people,
uh-huh.
he was still doing that, wasn't he?
But I feel that there is... being a public figure like that, who is inherently non-political... when all of a sudden you get shifted into a political figure because of a type of satire that you have done behind closed doors.
I don't think he's a political figure at all.
No, in the broad sense of like a political
figure. He's found himself in the middle of a political scandal for want of a better word. It is political. There are people on either side opposing these things. But if you actually, I mean, from what you've described, I don't think this guy's done anything wrong. It's okay to satirise Islam.
So I don't think that he's done anything wrong, but I don't think that he's ever wanted to be a satirist.
I don't
think because that was never his intention.
Like,
I think comedy to a certain extent is your intention of audience and stuff like that.
He was trying to be funny.
Yeah, he was trying to be funny to his friends. It was the fact that it was in a closed environment where everyone was comfortable with each other and it's been leaked out.
But he was never prepared to offend people. He was never prepared to.
But you can never predict what people are actually going to be offended by, can you?
No, sure. But when you're in his position, where you're meant to be like a societally neutral figure, then I think
it's up to him. I mean, it's his choice if he wants to become a politically controversial figure.
And he could. What would be really interesting would be if he'd taken a more hard-line thing and be like, I was drunk with a mate, so...
I didn't do anything wrong.
And I'd have... I think that probably the right thing to do would have still been to apologise.
Yeah, but this is the thing, right? You're asking him to apologise for something... He hasn't done anything wrong, mm-hmm. and we agree that private conversation should remain private conversation. This is what drives me crazy. It's like, oh, God, you know, 5 years ago, you were recorded doing, you know, saying something stupid with your mates, and then, you know, you're running for president.
With
running
my
for
mate, office.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but we've all done it, you know, we've all said stupid stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that then comes out 5 years later, everyone's like, oh, pointing fingers. It's like, what, cast the first stone, go on. Which one of you has never done this? You know, no, apologising for this sort of thing is silly, and it really shouldn't be, it shouldn't be required, even if it's something really quite shocking. It was said in private conversation, it wasn't for you to hear, you shouldn't
do
be
you,
hearing
Do you think
right?
that it was shocking?
What,
like mocking prayer?
No, really.
So I understand...
I mean, prayer is fundamentally stupid, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's fundamentally irrational.
Well, actually, no. There are actually sort of physical benefits to
If you're following that line, you wouldn't actually believe that prayer is effective.
Yeah, exactly. The reasons for praying might be irrational, but the act of prayer itself might not actually be irrational. But this thing, there's nothing wrong with satirising someone's religion. It doesn't matter if it offends people, and frankly, I don't care if it offends people, and he shouldn't either. He should have literally just stood up and gone, I did nothing wrong, I'm not going to apologise, what are you going to do?
I still think that he was right to apologise.
Yeah, but that's
because not everybody. Although we all have the right to offend, I don't think that everybody wants to end up accidentally offending.
Yeah, but I don't think you should capitulate to the moral busybodies.
How do you mean?
Well, What sort of
person?
Do you
want to be a bit louder when you stand up, Jimmy?
Sorry.
Sorry, Jimmy, just crash around a bit.
Yeah.
There we go. But seriously, though, what right do these people have any expectation of an apology from this man?
Because all of a sudden that ended up being a public piece of media, and by that definition, people are allowed to have an opinion on it, and people are allowed to...
Do we think he's going to change his behaviour in private now? He's never ever going to take the piss out of Islam
again. Yeah, but that's entirely
So I don't think his goal wasn't to take the piss out of Islam.
Yeah, it was.
Obviously
it was.
I don't think so. What was he doing?
Yeah.
I think that he was just being silly with mates. He thought that there was something like, oh, let's...
Oh, come on.
Yeah, he was... He was satirising
it. He was taking the piss.
And it's okay to do that.
I think you're giving him a bit more of a benefit of...
Yeah, but okay, but what I mean is, like, look, the sort of person who will badger you for an apology over something that you said in public that's suddenly come out is exactly the sort of person you should never apologise to, because they will never accept it.
But I don't think...
And this is why he was getting dragged over the coals, even after his apology. They don't accept it. Don't ever apologise to these people.
So I think that he is now able to kind of, like, start fresh, and I think that should be allowed. But
start
I think...
Fresh.
Yeah, exactly. This guy's done nothing wrong, and he's being treated like some sort of criminal.
No, but people will view the stuff that he's done as really offensive to something that they see as really integral to their religion.
I hope
but
they
he,
do.
But he, as somebody who is not meant to be a political figure in that way, has ended up accidentally offending people.
Absolutely.
And you can go, shit, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Don't get me wrong.
It's
entirely up to him. If he wants to say, look, I was drunk, I was messing around, I didn't mean to offend, that's entirely up to him.
And then you can say sorry at the end of that, right?
Sure. Yeah, no, of course. But nobody has he has no obligation to apologise to them.
No, of course. I completely agree.
But that's the thing. There is the expectation that he should.
So when
you had that from the start, isn't it?
So maybe I'm saying it in the wrong way.
Yeah.
When I say I think that he should apologise, if it were me, then I would also apologise.
It would be
because
a wise
if you accidentally stand on somebody's toe, shit, sorry.
Sure.
And I think that that's what's happened. And there is the argument, fundamentally, in terms of being able to do satire and being able to mock and being able to do all of that kind of stuff, that wasn't a space that he ever wanted to be part of. He was pissed with his mates.
Well, it was private.
And I think that allows.
You're talking about it in terms of like media strategy, though, really.
At the end of the day, this is going to damage him in terms of an athlete and being able to get.
It shouldn't do.
I wouldn't think so.
No, but of course it's going to, because Adidas are going to have a large Muslim audience that are going to be offended by
probably
that.
Get sponsored by Protein World or something.
Or like Beachbody Ready.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder what Sadiq Khan's going to ban next.
Did he ban that?
Oh, yeah.
He did ban that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Islamist and feminist withdrawal.
I think they should have been allowed just for the amount of graffiti that ended up on them and the parodies on Twitter.
Yeah, I thought they were brilliant.
I thought that was better. Obviously, it was a load of free advertising.
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought it was...
I like anything that gets memed, to be honest. Anything that becomes meme-worthy, I'm automatically well-disposed to.
I was gifted for the first time very recently, and it made me feel really special. is there anything else that you want to say about Louis Smith? Because we have kind of agreed.
But the thing is, right, this is just like the outgrowth of a
you were expecting us to rip each other apart, weren't you, Jimmy?
I mean, you have kind of torn chunks at one another.
Yeah, we can talk about Jess Phillips whenever you like.
Yeah.
I really like her, and I've seen your video on her.
Okay.
And
why do you really like her?
Okay. Let's go into Jess Phillips.
She's the most refreshing.
Can we actually discuss what Jess Phillips said this week?
Oh yeah,
it's worth prefacing.
Yeah. Four topics, listener.
Yeah.
Fun times. You can
go ahead, because I might have a moral judgment packaged in with my description of it, so you go ahead.
She suggested that Labour should have all women shortlists for every by-election until there's 50-50 representation in the Labour PLP.
That's not like a crazily controversial view in the context of the Labour Party.
It's essentially how the Labour Party functions at the moment anyway, to a certain extent, right?
Whenever there's a new
seat that comes up. And it was a woman, they're always on all women shortlists.
Yeah, this was in the context of they're reforming the boundaries of Parliament, so there's going to be 600 seats.
This is hardly the beginning. The thing is, if this was the first thing Jess Phillips had ever said on the subject, I probably would just brush it off and go, well, you know, that's her opinion. Mm-hmm. But Jess Phillips has quite a misandrist streak about her, doesn't she?
No.
Yes, she does.
I think that she...
When Philip Davies is in Parliament trying to talk about the male suicide epidemic and she laughs at that,
so
you know she does. And it's all ideological.
I don't know that that's happened.
That did happen. I think if the sexes were reversed in that scenario, there would be a nationwide
firestorm in the media.
I'm shocked that she ended up doing that. Yes. And that's very disappointing.
And so when Jess Phillips decides, oh, well, we need all women shortlist because we have a new
That's something that the Labour Party has decided that it's going to do for at least the last 15 years or so, right? They've had all women shortlist. They're the only party at the moment that has all women shortlists.
Yeah, and that should tell them something.
I don't think it's fair.
But I'm okay with the Labour Party deciding that that's a way to have female representation. I think that if you look at Parliament at the moment, when we have about 30% of seats being held by women, you do see a representation gap in something that's meant to be a representative democracy. Jimmy disagrees with the interpretation of that. I think that a representative democracy should look
You're talking about demographics, whereas I'm more interested in ideology.
Every woman is represented by their parliamentary, their MP. Right. Whether that person looks like them or not, they're represented by that person. So that person now has to address their interests and has to answer their emails and things like that. Right. Their gender is not a deciding factor in that, is it?
I think that the gender and somebody's sexuality and somebody's sex and all of those things, I think they all play into the way that somebody is able to raise certain topics. Obviously, MPs are not able to be in all places at one time.
But they
choose like a handful of issues that end up being what they champion within Parliament.
Yeah.
And when you end up with a more diverse Parliament that can be more representative of the country in that way, you end up with more voices being heard and listened to, and then changed for the better, I think.
Right, okay. I don't see why an MP can't champion, say, a male MP can champion women's rights.
I'm not saying that they are.
And they have every incentive to do so, especially if it's a large issue with their voting base.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree that somebody's gender doesn't stop their ability of being able to represent people of different backgrounds. However, I think that you're more likely to get an authentic viewpoint and authentic history when you have somebody from those backgrounds.
Okay.
And I think that that's valuable.
It's not illegitimate.
I choose to... So I've been in positions where I've like hired people in the past, and I like working in a diverse working environment. Mm. And so that does factor into how
You discriminate against people.
Yeah.
So their demographics. That's illegal.
That's actually illegal.
It is illegal.
No, I can decide on what kind of workplace that I work in.
Yeah, but you can't hire people based on arbitrary
actions. If you chose not to hire someone because they were a man, that would be illegal.
Yeah.
That would be
if I chose not to hire someone because they're a Muslim,
Sexual Discrimination Act or whatever it's called.
I mean, I actually went through all of this the other day because the BBC has been doing exactly the same thing, and I'm furious about it.
I prefer working in diverse environments, and I think that you end up with a better team when you have people from diverse.
But the thing is, that doesn't mean that you're suddenly allowed to break the law on who you hire.
I'm not sure.
It totally is, mate.
Well, I've broken the law then. I won't make assumptions about you, but I see the gender gap in representation in Parliament as something that should be fixed, at least in the long term. And I think that all of the political parties have at least address that and have different ways of being able to do it. Theresa May had her women.
Let's actually think about that. Are you sure that's a good idea?
What do you think?
Well, the Conservatives are currently on their second female Prime Minister.
Yes.
And they don't do all this. And Labour have zero female Prime Ministers. And zero chance of ever being elected to the Prime Ministership again, as far as I can see. And they've got all of these amazing quotas. Mm-hmm. They've got Jess Phillips banging the desk and screaming, more representation. It's not actually getting women really that far, is it?
I personally do not like all women shortlists. I think that there should be at least a long-term view to addressing that gender balance.
Why?
Because I think that you end up with better conversations in Parliament and you end up with better...
Yeah, but there are women in Parliament. They raise issues.
Yeah, but when they're only a third, when they're actually the majority in the population, I want my representative democracy to be representative of...
It is representative.
The thing is, just because someone's a woman, and even if they're, if they're a champion, quote, of women's rights, it doesn't mean that ideas are actually going to benefit women in tangible terms, because intention is not the same as a result, right?
But not only that, again, saying representative, these people are representing the constituents, and they have to represent all of their constituents.
Sure.
So,
the
thing is, what you're suggesting is now that the arbitrary characteristics of the MPs are more important than their policies and their merit and their abilities and all this sort of thing.
I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying it adds something that you cannot get if you are championing women's rights, but you are
down to the individual, isn't it? And that's down to the individual running for the constituency and the people in the constituency voting for the person that they think is going to champion their interests.
Visibility is hugely important, and the more women that you have in Parliament, the more visibility you're going to have of women in there.
No, there's a female Prime Minister.
There is a female Prime Minister.
I'm not worried about that. But even then, right? What I'm concerned
about. There hasn't been for the last 30 years, though, right? There's been a 30-year gap of having a female Prime Minister. What do you mean?
Why is this a big deal? 89.
I think it was 87 or 89.
91.
It's 91. Was it 95
minutes
then?
Christ, it was that long, was it?
Yeah, it's a long.
Because she really did have a good tenure, didn't she?
Yeah.
This is the thing. I personally don't care about these sorts of characteristics. I mean, I just they're never something I'm going to make a decision on a person about. You know,
it is something that I make decisions on. I think that as somebody who is from a minority background, I get quite annoyed sometimes when I'm gay.
Is that a minority background?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Of course.
Are you sure? I think you should check.
I mean, isn't everybody just on the spectrum?
No. What I mean is, if you actually go and have a look at some of the sort of radically progressive websites, you might not be a protected class anymore.
How so?
Because gays are all over the media now. They've been embraced by mainstream culture.
No,
gay people are they're the white men of the protected classes.
It's been a lot easier for LGBTQ plus people because by our nature, by the fact that we spring up just by chance, we end up in every single community.
Of course you do.
And so your chances of knowing somebody from that community is a lot higher. And then because our civil rights have accelerated a lot faster than, for example, civil rights in the US in like the 50s and 60s.
Would you take the demographics thing the other way around, though? For instance, there's way more Jewish MPs
where are you going with this?
This is going to go bad, but there's I think there's like 25 Jewish MPs, but the proportion of the population like 0.3% or something. So there's way more Jewish MPs in Parliament than there would be if it was purely representative. So do you think there should be fewer Jewish MPs?
Do I think there should be fewer Jewish MPs?
You do.
Sure.
No, if you're being logically consistent, you'd have to say so.
But probably.
That's weird.
Should there be more gas chambers in the UK?
Oh, that's not.
Joking.
Very crude.
I know.
Wait! Did you invoke Hitler? God brings him
No.
And I won.
That was an appropriate comparison.
So look, the problem I have with any just this whole line of thinking is that what you're advocating for is a top-down organisation of society. That is,
am I?
Yes, because what you're seeing is the result of a free liberal society making decisions from the bottom up, and then this is percolating up the ladder.
Yeah,
and to the point where so you have say okay, we've got 30% female politicians, but 70% male.
Mm-hmm.
That's not out of some sort of conspiracy to keep women down. It's not even because women don't have enough opportunities. It's because of each individual making their own personal choices. Right. I mean, most people don't become politicians, and out of the small percentage that do, most of them happen to be men, and most of them happen to be white. Well, most of them happening to be men could probably be put down to the fact that men are more competitive and aggressive, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they say white comes from the fact that we're an 87% white country.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just the natural result of a free society. Society choosing its own leaders.
Yeah.
If you say, well, now there needs to be more X, then hang on, what you're doing is saying that this natural result of the free society needs to be changed. And you've just got an arbitrary figure in your head.
So you're assuming that I think that we should... Okay. we, in theory, live in the most egalitarian and like liberal society that we've ever lived in terms of like voters' rights and in terms of laws, right? In terms of discrimination that I apparently don't partake in.
No, I'm not going to.
But so I agree that if we were starting from zero now, like the choices that people end up making is ideally egalitarian, and then the society that we have represented at the top should end up representing that we have all the way up and down, right? But the problem is that we do have an overhang from hundreds and hundreds of years.
But what I mean is, you're not going to. Right, okay, for example, there will never be 50% of computer scientists that are women. This will never happen, and it will never, ever occur. And so whenever I hear, like, someone who is some social planner who's like, well, we need X amount of women here, we need, you know, X amount of men there, like, they're, you know, it's never going to be, like, you know, 50% male nurses. It's just not going to happen.
No, but we, so the problem...
So you're making the argument that biology would trump...
It's not necessarily just biology, but it's also culture and attitudes, and people living their lives as they want to live them doesn't result in an even split. It doesn't result in that, right? It results in a higgledy-piggledy mess of all over the place. But the point is, it's what happens as a free society.
But whenever there is an industry that is dominated by women, they get paid less. When computer programming was a female profession, they were paid way less than when they ended up being a...
but that was in the 70s, so...
But still, when you adjust for that in terms of social sciences, then you're able to see that as soon as men end up being the majority...
Do you know what?
Because
nursing is a lot less productive than production.
Listen,
women go into service economies, men go into production economies. Men create things, women serve things. That's what happens.
Up until in general, right? Most computer programmers were women.
Yes, that's because most computers weren't exactly something everyone had. There were computers were the size of rooms.
Okay. I mean, how's your computer programming, Jimmy?
I think the point you're making, the economy in terms of how computing worked was totally different from what it is now. So,
Sure, but even when you adjust for those changes, women get paid less.
But computer programming, presumably at that time, was seen as a menial task, which I assume was why it was given to women at the time.
It was seen as a hugely... Bletchley Park was majority women.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. But that doesn't matter. What difference does that make?
So the point that I'm trying to make is that women, whenever there is an industry that is seen as dominated by women, it seems being women's work. Whether that nowadays be seen as nursing or primary teachers or whatever, or the care industry, women's roles still end up getting paid.
Okay, hang on.
Hold on.
Okay.
We still have overhang, and obviously we appreciate that women getting paid less because they are women is a bad thing.
Okay, that's not.
But that still happens.
I agree that it's a bad thing.
But it still happens, not because of any deliberate I'm going to pay women less, but because of overhangs that we have for society that was very male skewed, very white skewed.
What you're complaining about is market forces. That's what you're complaining about.
But when the market force discriminates against...
The market force doesn't discriminate against people.
No, of course it does.
You are talking about this. Again, you're taking a top-down view of this. You're looking at the result and saying, this must have been the intention. And so now you have to unravel, like you said, unconscious biases. Now you have to thought police people to try and get this all out. Right?
I'm not thinking about thought policing.
As soon as you say unconscious biases, you're thought policing people, right? It doesn't matter what people think. It's none of your business either, right? It is, right? And so what you're saying is, look, like, what were the professions you just listed? Nursing?
Nursing, like social care and teaching.
Okay, what do they produce?
They are a service economy.
Exactly, they don't produce anything.
They produce
they don't produce a good to sell in the markets.
Uh-huh.
These are not productive industries. This is actually where the productive money is spent.
So is the UK buggered because we're a service economy?
Well, why do you think China's doing so well? Production is something. I mean, don't get me wrong. We're actually quite lucky with the internet and computers, right? Uh-huh. Because software and all that sort of thing can be produced. It's something that is produced and sold. So it's creating and producing. This is where the real wealth comes from, and it gets spent in the service industries. And okay, if women attracted to service industries. Uh-huh. That's fine. But you know you're not going to get rich as a nurse. You know you're not going to get rich as
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there still is a stigma to women's industries and to even when they are producing something like I keep on coming back to computer programming.
Yeah, I don't think that's a useful
I think it
example.
Is.
I don't think it is.
Okay.
And apart from the fact it would have been totally funded by a government at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So. It wasn't commercial anyway. Because there were only at the time there were six computers on Earth? You know, they filled a room, you know. It's not like it is now.
You might be right, but you'd have to go into a huge level of detail to establish that you're right. You'd have to really understand what exactly the economies were.
Back in those still, less than
Exactly.
But we still have an overhang from our past.
Yeah, but this is born out of sexism.
What I think the difference between perhaps us and Jess Phillips is that she wants to write that wrong as soon as bloody possible.
Yeah, but
because young women and women who are in their 20s now are still, or people who are above 30.
You just agreed below 30 that.
Women are
more than men. Is that due to discrimination?
No, but then women who are above 30 are because of the unjust overhangs that we've had in the past.
Right, I don't agree with any unjust overhangs. I don't agree with the premise of unjust overhangs.
Okay.
Right, I don't agree with that, right? And so Jess Phillips wants to get more women into the Labour Party.
And she's decided she's going to discriminate against men in order to do that.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And you don't see any problem with that?
I think that I'm not a member of the Labour Party. The Labour Party can do what it wants.
Okay.
That's not the way that I would want to do it.
Okay, so you do see a problem with it, though. I mean, not that you're going to stop them or anything like that. I mean, like you say, you know, if that's how the Labour Party want to do things, then...
Yeah, that's how the Labour Party want to do things.
But the fact that you wouldn't do it that way means that you don't think that's a great way.
I don't think it's the best way, but I think it's writing
See that's wrong with that way of doing it?
Because what we end up seeing at the moment, and I have lots of conversations with my brother, who also, surprise, is white and male.
What a bastard.
And I think that unfortunately, you see a lot of antagonism to those kind of social... reset switches that people are trying to do. So whether that's all female shortlists or positively discriminating against men in order to get more representation of women in certain STEM fields, for example, I empathise with those goals. But then I see people getting justly really pissed off at the fact that their privilege is being stripped down.
Privilege.
Yeah. Well, being white and being male is inherently privileged.
I don't agree.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. I think you're really wrong too.
Cool.
So it's okay to think we're wrong. But aren't you worried that? I mean, my problem with all of this, right? Say I create an all-female shortlist, and I say, right, okay, I'm only going to hire women. I'm automatically discriminating against the men in the Labour Party who are not responsible for the current state of affairs.
Mm-hmm. And some of those men are going to be less privileged than Jess Phillips.
Yeah, absolutely.
They could be poorer, worse background.
But I don't care about privilege. What I care about is the fact that these guys...
Because it doesn't exist.
No, it does. It's just different. it's different for individuals. No, but you're right. It does exist. Mm-hmm. But to say it's based on white skin is ridiculous. I mean, you have... way more charisma privilege than I will ever have. And so, you absolutely do. And so you can say, well, I'm an oppressed gay man, but you might be fabulously wealthy, you might be fabulously popular and fabulously charismatic. This is the thing, privilege is... The idea that people aren't equal is true. Mm-hmm. Each individual is different, but that affects other people differently, and you can't just blanket term the whole thing.
Sure, but so, for example, the issue that's on many people's lips is the way that police forces in the US end up interacting with communities from ethnic minority backgrounds.
Yeah.
There is no doubt that if you have white skin in the US, you are less likely to be stopped and searched, you are less likely to have harsh sentences, you are less likely to be convicted of crimes, and you're less likely to be...
That's an interesting...
And the only variable is the colour of your skin.
No, it's not.
And that...
No, it's not. No. Come on, you're British. What other... No. Think about it. Think about what other variable might there be?
It's class.
No, go on.
It's class.
I believe that when they do these studies, they control for class.
They don't.
Okay.
I think there's evidence that, I mean,
the majority of people in the UK who get in the US who get killed by the police are poor white people.
Is that an absolute figure, though?
Yes.
Is that control?
Yes.
That's just an absolute percentage of that demographic. Yeah. It's a lot
absolutely.
Higher. Yeah.
And as soon as you go to, say, poor white neighbourhoods and poor black neighbourhoods, uh-huh. you see a dramatic disparity in violent crime.
Sure, but
understandably, you are going to get more need to police the neighbourhoods with more violent crime.
No, sure, but even in those neighbourhoods, even when you control for the background and socioeconomic class of somebody, black people still get stopped and still get
I'm sure they do, and I'm sure that there is racism within the system.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the issue of class doesn't ever get spoken about in the United States. They have this fiction that they're a class society.
Yeah.
They're not. They're absolutely... Absolutely not. And so
it's
you
interesting
see,
when you compare
see
the UK and the US
things like
when
the homeless
are being in terms of how likely you are to vote a certain way.
Yeah.
For us, it's class and socioeconomic background. For
then
the
it's
US,
race.
It's race.
Yeah, yeah, it is absolutely. But one of the things that always drives me crazy is when they blame something on racism that is obviously based on class. When you have like some guy from some obviously deprived neighborhood, and he's talking in sort of like black sleek street slang. Mm-hmm. And then you get someone who is on MTV, like Francesca Ramsey, and she's not. And she's claiming to have the same struggle that he has. And it's like, no. Right? You have to... I mean, one thing that people always forget is that class is like so much more about than your wealth, right? MTV are not hiring the guy who's like, hide your kids, hide your wife, and all that sort of shit, right? That guy can barely speak English. Mm. He is never going to get any of the privileges Francesca Ramsey's got, because she speaks eloquently, and the blackness of her skin is not something that's sort of changing that. This is the look on your face is like,
But your view is racism is a factor in police violence, but class is more important.
There will be racism from individual police officers, but there is classism across the force.
Right.
And it is the same in every culture, in almost every society. I can't think of a society where the police treat the poor as well as or better than they treat the middle class and the rich.
Sure.
Can you?
No, of course not.
But you say class is a problem.
Racism, right. It will be a problem, but I think racism is probably a problem on individual levels. Because, I mean, you have, I can't remember which one it was, but there was a black officer who shoots a black kid who has a gun, who's pointing the gun, and that's blamed on white supremacy and racism. It's like, no, you're wrong. This obviously isn't racism. This is obviously class.
That's an overarching kind of... It has a lot of weight in terms of the split-second decisions that a lot of US cops end up making.
Oh, yeah,
I'm not saying that Francesca Ramsey is the same as somebody who's grown up in the ghetto.
Yeah.
I don't think she is either, but then I'm not a telepath, unfortunately. Yeah. Not yet.
I'm not trying to make a moral judgment about the cops who react to whatever's happening.
Sure.
You know, that's, I can totally understand. But there are too many videos around of American police. Like, there was one the other day of these American cops trying to run down a homeless man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they ended up just shooting like 14 times. Mm-hmm. That's not a race issue, is it? White cops shooting a white homeless man? It's not a race issue.
White cops shooting a white homeless man.
Yeah.
No, but that's another problem. That
yeah, but that,
US
that,
cops
that's a class
have.
Issue, isn't it? That's because they hate the poor.
And have contempt for
that
somebody.
Poor, if that homeless guy was black, would you say it was a race issue?
You'd be far more inclined. To
I mean, I'd ha- it,
let's be honest.
Yeah, I would be.
It
but
still...
be, but you would. I would make that assumption based on the rest
okay,
of the
okay, okay,
that
okay.
There.
So you would be more inclined to say there was a race issue. So if that was Francesca Ramsey, do you think the cops would try and run her down?
Well, no.
Because it's class.
But then we end up seeing people who are lying down on the street with their hands.
Yeah, hang on. Let's stay on this point. Yeah, but let's stay on this point. This is what I'm trying to exemplify, right? If you take a white cop running down a white homeless man, class issue. A white cop running down a black homeless man, race issue. But a white cop won't just run down a random black man. It's the fact that he's homeless that the cop is taking his action.
You're using a very specific example.
I am. But this is something that I think you can extrapolate to other examples, and you'll see for yourself that people, just because the races are different, doesn't necessarily make it racism. Especially if you just, you know, you just literally lay it out like that, you can see it's a class issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely, and there will be cases where it's race, don't get me wrong, I totally agree, there are undoubtedly going to be racist cops.
And I think that the biggest problems that we end up having are from race, actually. Because you can be from a, oh god, where am I getting myself into here? Go on, sorry.
I just think that it's easy to say race, because it's easy to look at someone's skin colour and this other person's skin colour and go, well, now I'm psychic, I know exactly how he feels.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually just lay out, honestly, I think a lot of it is down to wealth.
If in aggregate, like, how racist individual cops, does that not mean overall, well, the system is more racist?
Now you're going to have to prove that all of these cops are, well, most of them are racist.
I'm not saying all of them have to be
racist. I mean, don't get me wrong, if most of the cops in the system are racist, then yeah, you're probably going to end up with a racist system.
You don't even need most of them, you've got a minority, and
yes, that's true, but I mean, I don't know how many American cops are racist, and I wouldn't want to paint them all as racists. I don't even think they're all classists, you know. I just think it's probably more likely there are more of them. It's a more acceptable
bigotry. So I agree that clearly classism in the police force, and probably we should talk about that to the same extent that we do about race.
Yeah, absolutely.
But both of those are a Venn diagram, and there's a huge overlap.
Yeah, there's bound.
And I think that there is a very strong point at the moment with Black Lives Matter, for example, bringing. You can have opinions about that.
Oh, no, that's fine.
But I do. about them bringing these issues to, like, the fore. And I think that once you get. Once we end up in a Star Trek future where race doesn't matter, then stuff like socio-economic class should then and will.
Yeah, that was the 1990s, to be honest. The problem is that, I mean, if you look at the Black Lives Matter protests, they are, the participants are poor, really poor. Yeah, I mean the riots, not the like the Heathrow protest or something like that. But if you actually look at like the footage of the riots, all of these people are incredibly poor and probably not very nice.
I don't know anything about.
About the Ferguson riots and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the looting of houses. Was it the Milwaukee ones where they like beat all the white people and stuff like this, right? This is something I've been trying to elucidate to myself for a long time, right? This is not... These people, we can all agree that when someone is standing in front of a crowd full of angry mob yelling, we should go to the white suburbs and burn them down because these are our weave shops and we need our weave, we can probably assume that's not the first time that person has been a complete cunt, right?
Right.
Sure.
And this person is being a complete cunt. You don't say, go and burn down someone else's property just because you're angry at, say, the police. Right? Mm-hmm. That's something you don't do, right? And the people, her, and that woman, and all of the people listening, are just cunts. These people are just selfish cunts, right? And they might have a good reason for being selfish cunts, don't get me wrong, and I'm sorry for the language, but...
We have an explicit rating on iTunes already.
Fans. but there is no doubt that these people are the sort of people you probably wouldn't associate with on the basis of their personalities, right? Are you going to hire that person?
Sure, but I don't think that those people are necessarily... I don't think those people are representative of...
I'm talking about them, themselves. I'm not saying they represent anyone. These individuals...
There's Twazaks everywhere.
Yeah, there are. There are. But why is it all the videos we get are the Twazaks?
I don't think that all the videos we get are the Twazaks.
They are, though, aren't they? Which ones are?
I think you see there's a lot of images of people protesting... silently. I think that actually the way that
I'm talking specifically about the riots,
gentrification of the Docklands, and
I'm talking specifically
was actually, it was an annoying protest, but it was a really respectful.
That's fine, but I'm talking specifically about the riots in majority or largely black cities in America.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people are lower class people. I mean, you can look at it from the Hillsborough riots and stuff like that. I've been planning to do a video where I'm just going to juxtapose the footage because I guess I'm sick of the race realists going, oh, it's because they're black. No, it's because they're poor. All right, it's because they're poor. This is what poor people do. They fight.
No, but then you're going to hate me using this phrase. But then you, that's where those two issues of class and race intersect. And then you get kind of... I knew that you were going to make me laugh. And that's... those are the people that need... Like, it's the whole analogy of, like, a house on fire that's burning.
Yeah, but,
like, you're not going to do it on all of the houses in the street.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, this is a red herring.
People who are poor and of colour are going to be the ones that need the attention.
No, because poor white people still have problems as well.
So I think that poor white people...
They still get killed by the cops, they still get oppressed, they're still impoverished, they still need help.
I wish that we were able to talk about issues of like poor white men, especially.
I don't want to single out poor white men. That's the point.
As an example,
I'm actually not interested. This is my problem, and this is the difference between, I think, liberals and progressives. Right? Mm-hmm. Progressives want to talk about
what do you think I am?
You're a progressive. And that's okay, you know. It just you're a lot more top down than
you
liberals.
You didn't call me aggressive. So that's
I didn't call you aggressive.
you are that.
I am polite. But you're certainly not an SJW, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, he's not. Fact that we're having this conversation means he's not. Right?
I've been on the receiving end of social justice warriors.
Wow.
So I don't know if you can be one and also be called out by it. I don't know.
Well, you can. They can be awful, can't they?
The revolution eats its own, though. Right.
But it absolutely does. The people who start the revolution never finish it, do they? Okay, so the problem I have, right, is I don't really care about someone's race, someone's gender, someone's sexuality, any of this thing. None of these are things about the person that decided. None of these things are things about the person that can really change. And none of them actually give you any informative or any kind of real knowledge about the person. I mean, you can't say, right, he's black, therefore he must X. You know?
But then when you're from those backgrounds, you, and I say this growing up as like a gay man, you end up being defined.
Okay,
like
so tell me
that
something.
Tell
me something all gay guys have as a personality trait.
Oh no, that isn't the case. But
exactly.
Something that all gay people have had to do is come, if they're out, is come out. And I think that's something that
that's not a political move, is it? It's family politics, maybe, but it's no one else's business.
But I think that when you're from that background and you've been defined often by society as that background for such a long time, that's ingrained in your being. Like, you define yourself in a certain way, and I think that's true across society. And it would be lovely if we were in the Star Trek future.
Yeah, but no, but you're missing my point, right? And A, we're never going to get to the Star Trek future while there are people who are obsessing over race, right? We're never going to get there while people obsess over race. And the more they obsess over race, the less close we are to that future, okay? So that's a fact.
Yeah, okay.
There's no getting around that, right? But what I'm saying is, the fact that you're gay, I can't predict anything about you based on that, other than you maybe... I don't even know whether you take it or give it, right? This is my point. I don't know... Yeah, but I don't know anything about you because you're gay. The only thing I know...
He's attracted to that.
Exactly. The only thing I don't even know what kind of man.
You know I've probably been discriminated against at some point in my life.
I don't know that.
I've probably been catcalled in the street.
Yeah, but sure.
That happens to a large number of gay people.
And I am,
to a certain extent, defined by those aggressions that I get in society.
Yeah, but these things happen to everyone.
For my whole life.
But
I have been defined by the way that people treat me, by my sexuality.
You define yourself.
No, of course I do. But also, because of the way that society has treated me, people from the same background as me,
I have gay Essex lads.
Yeah. No, gay,
well,
you're
not,
gay you're guys not. In the UK
yeah,
are treated a certain way by society.
Not necessarily. You might not even know.
A large number of people do get treated the same way based on their backgrounds, and that's the same. We're not going to know what it's like to walk past a builder's site and get whistled at and get told to get your tits out. Women do and are told that all the bloody time.
I don't know if that happens all the time.
It happens all the bloody time.
I've seen women walking past builder's sites completely unmolested.
Sure, great. But I remember when I thought that this must be something that happened sporadically at most. It happens to women all the bloody time.
I'm fairly sure it does happen.
Let's just assume it happens, right? Do you think there isn't some sort of male-female equivalent the other way around?
Not really.
No.
Have you ever worked in an office full of women?
Yeah.
And you're the gay guy, so obviously it didn't happen to you. But no, no.
Because I'm gay.
Well, there we go. See, this is now. This gets me back to my point, right? I can't tell you anything about you because you're gay. I don't. Mm-hmm. That doesn't give me any.
What's your point about working with female
lovers? Let me stay on this because this that doesn't give me any relevant information about you, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that someone's a man doesn't give me any relevant information about them. The fact that someone's a woman or black or any of these things, I can't make any judgments on an individual basis. Based on the fact that of what they are, right? I have to look into them as an individual, and then it becomes about their personality, their choices, their character, right? And now that brings us to what they do with their choices, because that is where we actually need to be looking. For example, I don't want to just focus on the suicide rate of young white men, right? Just because it's really high, I don't really care that they're young white men. I care that these are people committing suicide. And everyone's journey to this point is different. It's unique and individual. And there are women who commit suicide, there are black guys who commit suicide, you know. And so I would rather talk to or deal with the people getting to that point on the basis that they're thinking of committing suicide rather than caring about what their ethnic origins are.
But can I make a point countering that?
Sure.
Is that if you're a doctor and you're looking at someone's medical history, their race, for instance, would be hugely relevant to
certain diseases. That's the only time it's relevant, yes, I agree.
No, but if you're looking at a social problem that does correlate with...
That doesn't actually tell you anything about... This is something that drives me crazy. People think they can apply averages and statistics to individuals. You can't. A doctor can only look at a black guy and say, oh, he's more likely to have heart disease or something. You can't point about heart disease because he's black. You don't know. This is the thing. All of these generalizations fall apart as soon as you get down to an individual level. And it's easy to think about...
The risk factors are still relevant, right, in terms of developing public policy?
Possibly, because you're doing something in like a mass scale.
Yeah,
but and you might want to tailor your policy in a certain way because of the majority of X or the majority of Y. But the important thing is the fact that these people are committing suicide. And so... There are several factors that aren't based on whether you are male or female, black or white, that get you to that point. It's not being any of these things that gets you to that point. All you're doing is going, well, this demographic is doing it most. Okay, but what does that tell you about
that? But then you can find out stuff about, though, if it's like white people in Birmingham that are the most likely to commit suicide, you know that there is something within that community that is possibly affecting their...
What would it be?
Who knows? You investigate. As soon as you get down to
the individual level, you realize that each person goes through a different journey and has completely different influences on their life, all from various like family life, you know, their friends, their family, their neighbors.
I think you'd be surprised how important demographic factors are in determining a person's life, like and their life chances, and whether they're going to be affected by X, Y, Z problems. And
I don't think that there are anything you can make any predictions by.
I think you can make a huge amount of predictions. You can, certainly across like a national scale.
Yeah, say. But like I'm saying, these aren't really that useful when dealing with actual people. This is like the tyranny of statistics. Let me think of the right to put it across. This is why you end up with Jess Phillips discriminating. Now listen, this is why you end up with Jess Phillips discriminating against men in her own party who have done nothing wrong, who have done nothing to deserve it, who have just done nothing but work hard their whole lives, and then suddenly they get to a point going, right, you can't even apply for this position because you were born wrong. That's an injustice, and it's this kind of method of thinking that gets us there.
But then she's obviously looking at the macro, whereas you tend to look at the individual.
Yeah, but that is the individuals who are being affected through no fault of their own by these policies, and that's the tyranny of statistics right there.
Mm. But she wants to get us to a point where somebody's gender doesn't matter as quickly as possible.
Why is she making it the focus of her entire campaign?
Because she's decided that she's going to be the new Harriet Harman champion woman stuff.
Well, that's a bad idea.
But
that's not going to get us to not focus on gender, is it? She spends her entire career focusing on gender, then goes, "Well, I just didn't want to focus on gender." Bollocks! You just wouldn't do it. You'd be the change you want to see.
You guys want to get to the same end goal. You just differ in how
in
you
the way.
Yeah, but I don't think obsessing over race and gender is ever.
But you think that having a focus on those
it allows you to counteract those problems, and if you choose to. Do it in a more rapid way, or do it in a way that like resets everything and gradually changes. I think that we want the same thing.
Here's this. I don't even think it's a problem.
Okay, I think you need to leave. Do you mind if we wrap up?
I can do another cup of tea.
Both made your points as clearly as you're going to make them in there.
I've had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah.
I really have.
Where can we find you online?
Just Google my YouTube channel, which is Sagan Vakad, and you'll find me.
Yeah, you can find me at Jazza John. Feel free to attack, chastise, agree with.
Don't do that.
Don't. To be fair, they very rarely do. Yeah. But you can find me at.
Honestly, I'm sensing a left-wing Milo Yiannopoulos here.
Wow, that's probably the nicest thing anyone's ever seen.
That probably is the nicest. Maybe I should go for a rip, sort of, for blonde hair and everything.
You know, don't lose the beard though. He's got a fabulous beard.
Oh, thanks.
I tweet a picture of me. I'll retweet it just so people can see it.
Awesome, I will do that. And Jimmy, where can people find you?
At JDE Nichols.
Also, leave stars,
on iTunes.
5 of them, and reviews. We're desperate. We're not. It's fine. But it calls to action.
You've got it.
Yeah. All right, bye everyone.
Bye bye.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Bye.